What's going on, folks? Thanks for joining me on another episode of the Duck Gun Podcast, the podcast where you learn to be a better duck hunter. Today's episode, we're going to be doing a Q&A. We dropped questions, we dropped a thread over on the Fellowship of the Duck Gun and over on my Instagram as well. So we got a bunch of Q&A questions to answer for you guys. You guys ask, and we'll answer just about anything. So I'm real excited to jump into those. There's a bunch of really cool, interesting questions. But alongside me tonight, we got Hunter, the King of the Cans. How you doing tonight, Hunter?
Oh, doing awesome. Just living the dream.
Oh, yeah. So we're hot off the hills of coming back from the boat. So you guys just probably heard that episode. If you haven't, you should, because the boat project is awesome. We're actually going to cover a lot of stuff on this episode as well, because we had plenty of questions come in the Facebook group as well as over Instagram. But we're definitely excited about all that. Just coming hot off the hills of that, and it's coming into turkey season, and youth opener for me is on Saturday. I was actually telling you this, Hunter. I was out there scouting and walked up on a couple toms yesterday. So I'm that's got the adrenaline flowing, got the excitement going. Tomorrow night, I'm getting the nephews out, and we're going to do some target practice, make sure that they're all dialed in and ready to go for youth season. And then not long after that, it'll be season. And this year, more than usual, I'm hoping that I'm able to bag my turkey pretty quick, just because of how busy I am with, whether it's content or whether it's working on the boat project or whatever. It's just I don't care if turkey season is like one day, one and done this year. That's never how it works. I shouldn't say never. It would not be the common thing for me. Usually it takes a little bit. But Hunter, aren't you going on some turkey hunts?
Well, it's to be decided yet. It's kind of based on work and overtime stuff with work, but I do hope to get out. I've been out turkey hunting before. I've never shot a turkey. And I have a buddy that is very, very excited to take me out. And he's very, very confident that he can get me on a turkey. So we'll see how this all rolls out.
Nice. Yeah.
So the question is, if you want it to be over soon, are you going to bag yourself a Jake, or are you actually going to wait for a Tom?
No, I'll wait for a Tom. My nephew is 10. And last year he shot a Jake on opener. So he's talked about it a little bit with me and his grandpa, my dad. And my dad's pushing him a little bit, and I think he's kind of suggested he wants to get a Tom, but I'm going to egg him on. I mean, hey, you're 10. I mean, it's your second year turkey hunting. You got your whole life to be selective. I mean, if you get a Jake in the decoys, this is my mindset. If you get a Jake in the decoys at age 10, like, I don't have a problem with you shooting a Jake. Honestly, I'd probably even suggest it. I just want as many successful encounters with turkey hunting at his age. And, we only have 2.5 weeks. There's only a limited amount of times. It's like the old deer saying, like, if you're happy with that at the end of season, then shoot it as soon as it comes in. So if you're happy with, eight point deer, shoot that right at the beginning of season. I don't know. That's the beginning of your hunting trip. Maybe season, if you're right there, is a little different. That's my perspective. And what's your thought on that? Should we be pushing him as a 10-year-old to like only shoot toms, or is like if a Jake comes in and you're excited about it, just pull the trigger?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd like let him make his own decision on it, because there is a certain amount of value in like also being. I understand you want to have him on successful hunts, and this is the same thing with duck hunting, right? You want to get him out on successful hunts. And success is measured in a lot of different ways. But at a certain point, you also want them to feel kind of the defeat of like passing on a Jake and then there not being something else there. There's a sure. lesson to be learned in that. And I don't know if it's learned at 10 years old or if you should wait and teach him that lesson later in life, but there's a certain lesson.
Teach you that lesson at some point, whether you want to learn it or not. But
yeah, I mean, like we all have the one story where it's like, oh, I passed on the whatever. And then didn't see anything for the rest of the year, or didn't see anything that compared for the rest of the year. So it's a lesson to be learned, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of different perspectives you can have on it, but I don't know. I guess I'm just of the mindset at 10. It's like, man, you got like what? I'm 34. You got 24 more seasons until you're my age. Like you got a long time that you can, you know, wait for Tom's and trophy hunt and this and that. It's like, let's just get her done, get the job done. Because who knows? I mean, he's one for one on shots, but as a 10-year-old, I don't know how proficient he'll be as well. So we'll find out. We'll have plenty of turkey season here to figure that all out. But yeah, you got any other updates before we jump to the partners and get in the main meat of the podcast?
Not really. Just still been working with Ellie, trying to do some off-season stuff. She's still a turd, but nothing new there, really.
Yep. Just time and dedication, right? And mm-hmm. And a little bit of, I don't even know what else. I'm not a dog expert by any stretch, so I can't give you too much.
I don't know, but Chief did good. You brought him with us last time working on the boat, and honestly, less of a hassle than I had in mind. It was less of a problem than I figured it was going to be.
Yeah. It was kind of like a decision that was made pretty hastily. A lot of things kind of came together right before we left, and he's an escape artist out of his kennel. And we've talked about that a little bit. It'll be like, we'll get done training. And it's kind of odd because you'll be like, okay, he's done training. He's a little more tired, this and that. And then I'll leave. And it's like, I don't know if he's upset that I just left him and he tries to get out, but he gets out right after that. So that morning we did a training, and the Friday morning we're leaving to go work on the boat. And he broke the kennel. He jumped up there and like it was just a weird way it broke too. And I took like 30 seconds to look at it. I'm like, this isn't like a quick fix. And we decided to switch from the truck to the bus. I'm like, well, this is going to be easy. We'll just put him in the kennel, take him with us. And so that's what we did. And I'm like, I'll just deal with that hassle instead of this hassle. And like you said, it really wasn't that bad. We figured out pretty quick how to like hand him up the ladder.
Kind of.
It was. Yeah. He, the first time we did it, he was panicked. After that, he kind of got it. The time that you and me passed him was probably the worst. So for whatever reason,
yeah, he kept like wrapping his leg behind mine. I couldn't get him lifted up and over.
Yeah. Well, I mean, something about being lifted off the edge of like a boat that's 10 feet up in the air. And he's never experienced that. So, but yeah, we've done a lot of sit and place work. So, like while we were working, we were able to do that and he would actually stay pretty well. And it was actually really good practice for that. Cause there was kids going around. There's like, you know, all kinds of stuff going.
Like kids playing with RC cars in the driveway and people working on other boats. And we were always moving around and walking by him and stuff. Like I said, it was pretty good. And then he just hung out with us after we got done working for the day and fell asleep on the floor of the boat and just kind of hung out.
He was a champ, man. I feel like, too, it was like a bonding weekend for me and him. So I was glad at the end that I got to take him because it was fun. Mm-hmm. Fun to have him along. So... All right, let's get a quick word from the partners, and we'll jump into all of the questions. So first off, I'd like to give big thanks to Onyx. Guys, Onyx has a great app for the waterfowl hunter. It shows you the boundaries for private land, for public land. It's great for turkey season. I've already seen turkeys different places, and actually, I just got permission on a new spot last night, driving by, clicked right on the Onyx, went to their house. It's almost like I've used it for so long that I almost take it for granted, but it's like it was that easy. Just I saw the turkeys, clicked on it, drove to the guy's house, knocked on the door, said, "Hey, is so and so home?" And his wife went and got him, and bam, I got permission, got turkey permission. So, it's a great all around app for hunters in general. So check them out, guys, over there at Onyx. It's got a whole suite of tools that's going to help you be hunting and be more successful while you're doing it. So also like to give a big thanks to Final Approach. Guys, Final Approach actually has a lot of turkey gear as well. They've got a new vest. The last strut. There we go. The last strut vest. They got pot calls. They got mouth calls. They got the cordata. Long sleeve shirt, gloves, and pants. I believe that's how you say the word, cordata. But I did have to Google the pronunciation the first time I read it. I'm not going to lie. not a term that I use too regularly. But anyways, Final Approach does have turkey stuff as well. I know they're known for their waterfowl gear, but I'm going to be putting some of that turkey gear to the test in the coming weeks. So if you're in the market for turkey stuff, as well as your waterfowl off-season stuff, go over to fabrand.com, and you can use your code DuckGun over there and get 10% off. So check them out. I'd also like to give a big thanks to Weatherbee. Man, we're just going to be talking about all the turkey stuff on this podcast because Weatherbee just came out with a Sorex gun, semi-automatic shotgun. It's got a sweet, I mean, really sweet camo job on three different models. It's or camo options. It's got a cool feature where you can switch the receiver on there, not the receiver, but
the charging handle
to left. Yeah, to left-handed, which is, you know, it's a pretty cool feature to add on there. The best part about it for turkey hunting is that it's got pre-drilled and tapped holes on the top, so you can add a red dot on your turkey gun. I know a lot of guys in this day and age are switching to that red dot, so it's set up for you. I'm actually going to go old school and go iron sights, I think, on it this turkey season, but I'm excited to get it out there because it's my first chance to actually shoot that gun. So check them out, guys. Weatherbee has some great waterfowl shotguns and, you know, dual purpose there with the Sorex for turkey hunting as well. Also like to give a big thanks to, where are we at? Motion Ducks, guys. Motion Ducks is the jerk rig on steroids. They put the lifelike motion in your decoys on those weary days, on those no wind days, on those low wind days. You can put those ripples and lifelike motion right in your set. Those wary birds aren't going to stand a chance when they see that, and they'll be duped into coming right into your decoys. They got the ultimate and they got the regular. Honestly, last year I used the regular more than the ultimate just for the simplicity and quickness of it. The ultimate's not bad either, but check them out over there, guys. MotionDucks.com/DuckinChronicles. Use code DuckIn10. That'll get you a discount, and that'll get you an anchor bag as well. So, all righty. Let's go ahead and jump into today's episode. So, do you get a chance to read over any of the questions, Hunter?
Yeah, I read through, I think, most of them. Probably 80% of them I've, like, at least skimmed through.
Okay, so what's your take? We got some good ones tonight.
Yeah, we got some good ones. We also obviously have some trolling ones. I guess is the best way to say that. Some ones that are definitely.
Trolling, I don't know.
What?
I wouldn't call them trolling, but I, unless there's ones I've missed, but because trolling implies, like, in my opinion, I guess it implies like a negative. Like a dig or something. Are there ones I missed that they're the trolling?
No, I would say more like trolling is kind of like asking a question, knowing you're going to get a rise, like knowing it's going to cause some sort of discussion or cause some sort of debate, I guess.
Well, I did say in the questions, I said, what did I say? I think I said something about give us some spicy ones or something like
Let's get some spicy ones.
So there you go. All right. So, let's jump right into it, and here we go. So first off, we got Thomas Hoke. Actually, I got mine in a different order. Let's just put it on all comments. Let's get this. There we go. We'll start with Ryan Nordstrom. Okay, he says, "Would you guys think about a three-state? What would you guys think about a three-state combo license for the Upper Mississippi Wildlife Refuge? Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota." Would that help reduce hunting pressure by spreading the people out more? So I'll take this one because I'm got more of an opinion on it than Hunter that lives in Iowa. And I'll give a quick take and then I'll let you jump in on this one, Hunter, because I'm sure you got, like I said, you got more knowledge on it and more experience. So my first thought is I don't think that would spread people out to have three different states or combo license. I don't imagine how that would make it, because you have, unless like one of those states has like way fewer hunters than the other ones. So I think that there's during the season, there's hunters that are going to be hunting in all those places all the time. And now if you do a combo license, it's probably going to make it more crowded because people who aren't traveling over those state lines because they don't have a license will end up in those places as well. So it would help out a hunter that's going to do that and make your price reduced if it's like some combo cheaper license, but then a lot of people are going to do it and you'll probably add more pressure to those states when other states are closed. So yeah, that's kind of my thought on it. Go ahead, Hunter.
Yeah, I kind of agree with like the, if you're, you know, the people that are going to state hop to extend their season, right? So Minnesota is going to open before Iowa North Zone, and Iowa North Zone is going to open before the Illinois Zone. And so like the people that are going to state hop in order to extend their season by those extra weeks are going to state hop regardless of a three zone, like a multi-zone license type of a thing like that. The one thing I will kind of like add,
so you're saying that it wouldn't like it.
Yeah. I don't think it would take away any pressure.
You're saying that it oh, okay.
I don't think it would take away pressure because people that are already doing stuff like that are going to be buying three states worth of licenses anyways. The only advantage is that then you can only have one license and you don't need to worry about having three different states licensing, which I don't know how that would all work legally and all that kind of stuff. The one thing I will say that would be nice, I know it can't work because again, like here, Iowa opens up a week before Illinois, but I really wish that our licenses for the Mississippi worked like fishing licenses where they went like essentially railroad track to railroad track. So if you had an Iowa license, I can fish on the Illinois side of the river, but I can only fish to like their, essentially it's a railroad track in most places. And I kind of wish we did that. I would know why it doesn't do that because again, like the season's opening up and everything and it being a state ran program versus like a federal ran program for our licensing. But I do wish that that was something that was more common for the hunting licenses, especially in the Mississippi. It's common for our fishing licenses, but it's not there for our hunting licenses, which I don't know. I don't think it would cut down on pressure though. I think if anything, it would make more pressure because I'm going to buy multiple states worth of licenses every year, but if I normally wouldn't, and it wouldn't cost too much more to get more states, then I'm going to end up hunting in the known places that everywhere else hunts. And you know that there's going to be birds. So I don't think it would really cut down on pressure.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I agree with you there. I guess I just misunderstood you there for a second, I think, but yeah. Yeah, I think we're in agreement on that. It wouldn't cut down on pressure. It might make some things more simplistic for the hunter, but it also would add a lot of complications on like the state side as far as like how do they decide like where the revenue goes and all that. So
yeah, and all those states have like state stamps and everything.
Right. I don't think it would ever happen.
No.
So Charles says, focus on beaver ponds and what or how to plant them to attract birds. Questions like when to plant, when to flood, how to control water levels, best food sources to grow. Should we plant trees or bushes for cover on the edges? So beaver ponds, that's a loaded one there. If you want to, and I did a little bit of research on this when I was doing like the snake swamp and trying to figure out how to plant and how to drain water. So, I mean, you'd have to have some type of pump to control water level. If you're not going to, you know, the way it naturally works in marshes is you have moist soil vegetation. We'll take like smartweed or like, millet if you're going to plant it. You can. There are places that you can buy stuff like that from. And with the moist soil vegetation in the summer, through the heat and all that, the water levels go down and then those moist soil vegetations get exposed. I mean, they can lay dormant for like a decade until they get the right water level for those seeds to take hold and grow. So that's why it's like it's not a surefire thing unless you're going to control it by pumping. So you either have to have a well or like a ditch or some other type of source or river, to pull that water from. If you don't have that, you're not going to be able to flood it back if you pump it out. So, or drain it out. You know, some people build levees. It can get really, really crazy. So, but if you're just going to do it yourself kind of thing, you could plan it when the water level goes down and hope that it goes and floods it back. But you just don't know what that year is going to bring. So there's really, really a lot that goes in there. As far as like cover, I mean, it doesn't hurt to have cover. And if you don't do anything, it's going to naturally grow up anyway, unless you're like mowing it down. So there's going to be natural cover that comes up around that. You know, same thing from seeds being transplanted or whatnot. And as long as you have some cover, I'm always a fan of, you could build a permanent blind if you own the property or if the farmer's letting you, or you could set up an A-frame in tall grass, and it's going to be enough of a profile difference that it's not going to be a big deal to birds, as long as you're brushing it in good and everything. So, Hunter, what's your experience on managing a private spot with a beaver pond? That would be a dream, honestly.
Yeah, I've never had the chance or opportunity. I hunt pretty much exclusively public ground, unless it's a dry field. So I would have no idea. I mean, from what I know about the beavers and like the streams and stuff around here, you have no control over water levels. So don't even try, because they're just going to do what they want anyways. So that's all I know about it.
Right. Yep. Yeah, and that beaver dam could, bust away at any point, too, from too much rain. So, but have fun with it, man. At the end of the day, if you got a cool spot like that, you know, try your best to do everything you can. But unless you have some type of pump to pump the water out and some type of water source to pump it back in to control the levels for planting and growing, then you kind of really, you know, at the whims of Mother Nature on that one.
Yep.
All right.
This next one's
hot. Okay. You go ahead. You read it. Is it Sean Watson?
Yes. It says, why do folks feel it's acceptable to walk in on people who get the hole first at 4 a.m. on public land 20 minutes before shooting light? Yes, I get it's public, but there should be more courtesy in public woods. So that's like the first part. And of course, there's lots of comments. But
right. I did see there's a comment train as well. So comment train. Yeah, I think we'll all agree that is not courteous, right? If you beat someone to the spot, they got first dibs. I will admit that I've maybe done it once or twice in like my early years before I knew better. So I think it's always good to talk to those type of people. And I've kind of learned that, you know, along the way. Even if you come in second, you can always talk to them and be like, hey, you got room for us? No. Okay. And then you go somewhere else or get back in your truck or whatever. But what's not acceptable is to be like, you know what? My grandpa has been hunting this his whole life, and then his dad, and now me, and this is our family spot on public land. And I don't care what you think, I'm going to hunt here.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with, like, it's definitely wrong. It's always good to, you know, obviously people have guns, people are kind of territorial. I mean, let's just call it how it is. So you want to go up to people when you got to know they're coming. You don't want to sneak up on anybody or anything like that. But it's, in my experience, if someone beats me to a spot, which doesn't happen, let's be very honest here, it just doesn't happen. But if someone does beat me to a spot, the first thing is I always talk to them. I always like, hey, you know, how's it going? Everything like that. See if you can hunt together. And if you do hunt together, it's their hunt, not yours. You're following their rules. You're following their calling. They're calling the shots. Like, that's the first thing I have to point out. And then the second thing is that if you don't plan to hunt with them, you know, most people probably have Onyx, and if you don't, you should have it. If you mark a pin where they're at and you put a pin on where you plan on hunting and you say, hey, this is what we're doing. Do you double check stuff. It's going to be however many yards away. Some public areas you can get further away than others, but I think a minimum safe distance is 200 yards in my opinion. But you know, like, you know, hey, this is where we're going to go. And then you'd be surprised how far that gets you with people just stopping and talking and being like, this is where we plan to go. This is how many guys we have coming, that kind of stuff. But the thread continues. Right.
And there can always be some anger and some.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. There can always be some anger and some heat between people on this too. So it's like you said, any kind of, what's the right word for it? Any type of reassurance that you can give them that, hey, I'm going this far away. Hey, because it's really hard to judge light distance, you know, in the marsh at night. And if you tell them, hey, I'm going to this spot, it's X amount of yards. Like, it takes away that anxiety from them, or like almost like tension or heat, by them knowing like exactly where you're going. So that's definitely a good tip, Hunter.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is too, with that, is if I get beat to a spot, and I don't think this is as common, but if I get beat to a spot, I don't know how to word it other than, even if I'm going to hunt 200 yards away, I'm still doing everything I can to not impede their hunt. I think it's kind of like a courtesy thing where if they beat me there, it's kind of like, I'm still not going to like rip on birds that are looking at them. I'm still not going to do things like that that are going to impede their hunt. Because in my opinion, they still beat me there. They still kind of have, maybe that's not a popular opinion, but it's just kind of what I believe.
Sure. No, I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you on that.
So, but the thread goes like further, and it's like, John Hansen makes a comment about, why has the community changed to be more toxic? And like, is it just, like with younger people coming in, not being shown, someone made a comment about people not getting hit in the mouth anymore. Like, I don't know. I think that it's kind of a cognitive bias as to the community becoming more toxic, to be honest. I think that the thing is that you hear about people being more toxic now, and it's not necessarily more toxic. It's just that since you hear about it, it seems like it, but maybe that's a bad call.
Yeah, I haven't experienced it being more toxic. The only thing I'd say that's more toxic is like internet chat forums, but that's just everywhere. It's not just duck hunting. That's just life, because people aren't afraid to say anything on the internet because there's no consequences to being a keyboard warrior. Whereas like if you did say something in person, you know, there are real world consequences to escalating a situation when two people have guns or two people, you know, want to fight or whatever it is. And it's not worth that for duck hunting. Right. So my experiences have been that, you know, everybody's nice in the marsh. We're all here hunting. We have a common interest, a common passion. And we all, at the end of the day, want each other to, you know, have a great time out there and be successful. And, you know, we're competitive too, but at the same time, you know, there's certain etiquette and certain boundaries that I think we all kind of stay within, and everybody can still have a great hunt. So it's like you said, if you follow kind of these guidelines, you're never going to be the problem, you know, and you're going to solve or reduce the likelihood of being someone else's problem and getting into some type of altercation as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And it's just, I mean, it is public ground, so you do have to kind of take stuff with a grain of salt. I think the other thing that maybe seems to be with like the toxicity thing of like the spots is I've always like talked to people that are like, oh, we've hunted here for day by day year. And, you know, it's been our spot for blah, 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 blah. Insert reason here. And like the reality is that those spots don't exist anymore. You don't have a spot on public ground that you have a right to, right, because your grandpa hunted it. And I think more people are like the people, I think, and this is not me saying anything about, you know, John or Sean here saying this is what it is, but it seems like that the like people are getting angry about that. The people don't respect the spot that my grandpa hunted, so therefore I get to come hunt 5 minutes before season. And I think that's where a lot of the friction comes from what I've witnessed.
Right. And there are places that are kind of like that, you know, to some degree, where there's blind draws and stuff like that. So there's parts, and I wonder if that's some of kind of the conflict there or the misunderstanding, because not everybody has the same rules or regulations, or they're not even rules or regulations, the same etiquette that I think a majority of the good folks that hunt kind of all, it's like unspoken rules. And that's almost part of the problem, because if everybody doesn't agree on like the distance or this or that or whatever, I can see how some things can come up. And then also there are places on public land where you can have a blind draw, and that's your blind draw for the year, which is almost treated like a private land spot too. So, yep. But we better
move on,
jump on to the next one. So, Carrie says, what do you say to a buddy you're hunting with that can't call, sky bust everything, and shoots decoys constantly? I do not. I mean, if you have 3 for 3 on that, that's pretty bad. I have buddies that do each one individually. And I actually told you guys a story, Hunter, while we're on the boat working. And it was a guy that was an older fellow, and he shot a Bigfoot decoy goose full body. Like, we just shot into a flock and we had some cripples. And it was like we had a rain out, like an actual rain out. I think it was maybe 6 of us hunting out of A-frames. We all pop up and, I mean, just dropping geese everywhere. So then there was 3 or 4 to clean up. once, you know, all the dust settled. And there is one standing the decoys. This old man stands up out of the blind, shoulders his gun, and just obliterates a decoy. So it can happen. It can happen. We all can make mistakes. I guess the flocking on that one was just too good. I don't know. yeah, if they have issues like that, it's just, you know, talk to them. If they can't call, tell them that they can't call. If they, you know, be honest with them, you know, like just be honest in a non-aggressive way, which I know that's not how buddies are a lot of times. And maybe you can solve it in a way where it's like, hey man, if you're going to call, like, you're not going to get invited. So don't take it personally, but we want to kill birds and you're preventing that. Skybussing. I mean, make them follow the shot call. If it's not your hunt and it's their hunt and they're skybusting, guess what? You can say it to them, but you can't. I mean, there's nothing illegal, I guess, per se, about skybusting. So it's like, just don't hunt with them if they're hunting in a way that you don't like. And if it's a really cool hunt and they're going to do that stuff, you just have to suck it up. And it's like, okay, I just know this is how it's going to hunt. Be hunting with this person, and I'm choosing to do that, opposed to doing whatever one of my other options are. And maybe you just don't have very many options. Get some more options, and then you don't have to deal with, you know, the things that are, they're bothering you about somebody else, which can be a real thing too.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I agree. I think it's like more difficult if, like in our area, right? So there's always the guy with the boat, and then there's the guys that go with the guy with the boat. If you're the guy with the boat, it's a little bit easier to be like, okay, you know, not invited to come on my hunts anymore. But if you're the guy going on other people's boats in this situation, it's a little bit harder to, you know, if that's your access, then obviously you have to work on different access things. But it's hard. The skybus thing, I think, is the easiest one there to solve, because then it's like, okay, I'm just going to call the shots. And if you shoot before me, then we're just going to have problems, right? Like, if you just make that pretty well known, then yeah, shooting decoys.
But if it's their... if it's their boat and their hunt, right? How do you get to call the shot?
Well, I mean, that goes back to having it be your hunt. So,
right.
I mean, sure, it is difficult. The shooting decoys, I mean, if they're shooting your decoys, then it's probably your hunt. But if they're shooting their decoys, then let them shoot their decoys. Who cares? Can't call. That's a hard one to deal with, because there's a lot of ego that comes into calling. Like, for some reason, certain duck hunters have a lot of ego around it. And like, if you're like, hey, you're not doing a good job, you know, they can get pretty butthurt pretty quickly. So that one, I think, is actually the most touchy, because you can fix decoys, you can call a shot, but you can't really repair someone's ego if you destroy it.
That's true. Yeah, it's tough. It really is tough. And it's too hard to know, like, all the interpersonal connections and everything that's going on in your group. This could be a mutual buddy and you're being invited on another hunt, and you all go and show up and this guy's there, and you're like, oh great, there goes my decoys. So I mean, a lot of groups, you know, kind of have shared resources too. So yeah. I don't know, it's tough. Right. I'd let them know though, and just do your best to not, you know, mess everything up, I guess.
All right.
Which doesn't really help. That doesn't answer anything, but
I'll answer Tim's here. I'll read it out at least. But what is the end result for the houseboat on the river? Like, how are you going to hunt with it? Where are you going to be traveling with it? And is the plan after the season is done? So the overarching thing is what's the end result? No idea. How are we going to hunt from it? It's essentially going to be a floating cabin. So we'll drive it down the river and we'll like tow.
You forgot to add the part where we're going to put the grass mats all over it though. Like a giant A-frame.
Have a 43-foot A-frame. That would be impressive. But the plan is to like drive it down the river, tow boats behind it. Pop out
the living room windows.
That would be so funny. Just right out of the pilot house door. Anyways. To take it down the river, and we'll anchor it, and then we'll use our other duck boats to go into spots, or canoes to go into spots for like individual hunts. Once a hunt's done, we'll come back to the boat and hang out on the boat, drive it to the next spot, do whatever we have to do there. What's the plan once season is done? We already have a marina for pulling it out for this next winter, but beyond that, that's Jordan's decision. You got anything to add to that? I don't know if he wants like locations.
Yeah, we'll see. Sure. We're gonna start in Minnesota. That's the plan. That's where the boat's at right now. It's in Wisconsin, but it's right in that area. So, and I think Minnesota opens up before Wisconsin. So that's the plan for it. The end result is just we're going to get as far as we can. I mean, we're busting it on it all the time that we can. It's going to be a dream season hunting out of it. And we're just going to get through that and figure it out because we just don't know. We don't know what I was going to be. I don't know how much it's going to cost. That's a big factor, really. Honestly, that's the biggest factor because as far as like I'm emotionally attached to this boat at this point. Like it's so cool. I love it. But at the same time, I have to like make smart financial decisions and cut it off at some point if I need to, because boats are a money pit and this is a big boat, which makes it a big money pit. So, and as we fix it up, it's just more and more apparent. So, we knew that going into it. But yeah, I think, you know, that's kind of the goal is to do something cool. So it's going to be cool. That's all we can say. All right. Josh Outdoor Limit says, outboards versus surface drives versus long tails, when, where, and why. And man, you could do a whole podcast on this one subject, right? So if I'm going to break it up into three categories, outboard is like the fastest, right? Because you can go bigger than you can go on surface drives. Technically, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I mean, you could do like three outboards or or not three outboards, like three surface drives, but I guess you could do three outboards too. So you can go faster with an outboard. For me, I feel like outboards are more of like a fishing or like a diver hunter type of motor. And it limits you on access where surface drives and long tails don't. The long tail does limit you on distance because it's not as quick and not as comfortable to drive as a surface drive. Hunter will disagree with me, but in certain places, the long tail can get you back in some muddy swamp areas better than I've ever seen any surface drive do it. So, more speed. That's my take on it. Hunter, you can go ahead and add what you got.
All right. So the overarching thing I'd say is that you have to pick it based on where you're going to be hunting. And if you're going to mostly be hunting, you know, open water, clean water, then an outboard's probably the best decision. The only problem with an outboard, even if you're going to run clean water, is that they will freeze. So if you have them in the water, you pull them out, that water that's inside there, if you don't let it drain all the way out, it will freeze and then you won't have any cooling water running through the motor. And then I'll go to the other end of the spectrum with the long tails. Like you said, I agree with the can't generally drive them as fast, so it kind of limits your range, and they are more uncomfortable to drive. They're more of a bear to handle around than a surface drive or an outboard is. I actually do agree with you that you can get certain places with a long tail that you can't get it with a surface drive. They tend to do really well in like that thick veg, like the vegetation that's so thick your boat almost like floats on top of the vegetation. The long tails tend to do better with that than a surface drive does. And then in my opinion, the surface drive is kind of like I shouldn't say the hybrid, but it's kind of the best of both worlds where you get most places you want to go. You get to get there in an efficient amount of time. The problem with the surface drive versus a long tail, though, is that they tend to be spendy compared to a long tail. I mean, you can get into a 15 horse, 20 horse long tail off at Facebook Marketplace for $1,500, but good luck getting a surface drive for less than $5,000. Like it's just probably not going to happen. Yeah. And that's for a cheap one. So,
well, you can get a surface drive closer to like $2,500 for like, I've seen some pro drive, like smaller 23 horse pro drives that are used like a decade old, mm-hmm. You know, in the same vein with a long tail, it's closer to like I said, maybe $1,500, even cheaper. You know, if you're getting like a non-American, like one of the
the SPSs and the Taiwan made stuff.
Yeah, the SPSs, which are from Taiwan. There we go. Yeah. So those ones you get for like a grand. So that is a big difference. And if you're not going to travel long distances, like most of the marshes in like Michigan, it's not like you got like this straight shot where you're just, you know, cooking and making these long hauls. It's through a bunch of crap if you're going to get anywhere, even if it is, you know, a little bit of further in there. So it just doesn't give you that big of an advantage to go to like a surface drive, unless you're hunting like the big waters or like making runs along like the coast of a Great Lake or something like that. So yeah, it's like you said, you figure out where you're hunting, the main places you're hunting all the time, and then you kind of take your choice from there on which one's going to give you the best route to success and also cost factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that's why I went with a surface drive for a lot of my stuff, is because we have open stretches of river where you're running 2-3 miles of river, and then you have to jet into some stump field with a bunch of marsh crap. And so like you got to have something that can run through both of that, which is great for a surface drive, where I know you like your long tails, but you tend to have smaller rivers, shorter runs, stuff like that. So it just kind of depends on what your right use case is, in my opinion. I mean, they're all good options. I think that if anybody's like, this is the best and this is what you have to have, you probably shouldn't listen to them, but they're good for, they all have their purposes.
Yeah. What if they say like they're superior or something like that?
I don't know. That's walking a thin line.
Makes a good title though on a YouTube video.
Yeah, that's true.
Colin says, I'm looking to get new decoys for the coming season. I'm between the SX full flocker mallard decoys and Dive Bomb F1 FF fully flocked mallard decoys. Man, he's got the names memorized. And what do you guys think and why? Man, I've really enjoyed hunting with the Final Approach decoys the last couple seasons. They come out with new carves. They got the Last Pass. They got the Live, and they got the HD, right? So they got like flocked head. They got fully flocked. They've came out with some great innovations, from mallards to black ducks to pintails to divers, and you know, so I'm a fan of those. They're also a partner of the podcast as well. So
use Duck Gun. You know,
say that again.
Use Duck Gun at checkout.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Use code Duck. I'm not trying to make a plug that way. I'm just as a disclaimer, because I know everyone's like, oh, you're saying this just cause you're partnered. But like, they are great decoys, and I wouldn't be partnered with them and wouldn't use them if they weren't. Mm-hmm. So, that's kind of my take on it. And honestly, I don't have experience with the other brands you're looking at. But I would suggest, if you're looking at decoys, to check those out before you make your final decision on what to pull the trigger on.
Yeah, I know that I don't have any experience with the SX fully flocked mallards or the Dive Bombs. I've used both Dive Bomb and SX different decoys, but never their fully flocked mallards. But I have used the fully flocked FA ones, and they seem to be good. I mean, in all, flocking lasted.
Right. We pulled them out at the teal hunt.
Yep.
At the teal hunt last year, and we were all around looking at them and just almost in awe, because it was like the most beautiful hen decoy we'd seen, you know, mm-hmm. Which is like, it's a hen decoy. Come on. Like, if the hen looks that good, you know.
Yeah. And they have the flocked body black decks too, which look really nice. And again, I don't have experience like with their other companies' flocked decoys really. So to say that, you know, obviously if you're looking at flocked mallard decoys, you know that the flocking's not going to last forever. You're going to have to baby them compared to a normal painted decoy. Like, you already know these things. So I don't think one's right.
The flocking on those is very durable.
Yeah. It's just, you know, if you hunt it for 5 years, it's probably not going to look like the day you bought it. You just kind of have to go in knowing that that's how it's going to be.
Right.
And so I don't have that much experience with these other ones to know, but that's what I'd have to say. I'd pretty much mirror your same thing.
Right. I will say you brought up the black ducks. And that's a great confidence decoy. So I had like a dozen of those that I'd throw out, and just a great, you know, with the contrast. A lot of people love running like the black or the dark color just for the contrast. And I think the fully flocked black duck is a great confidence decoy to add, even if you're not seeing them a lot in your area. Like, I added them around. We kill like a couple a year, you know, in our group. And yeah, it's great. It's a great addition to the set. All right. Troy King says, it's time for new waders. That's not a question, sir. So it's a statement. But maybe he's looking for recommendations. Last year I used the, Hunter, you just got some. What, you remember what the name is on them?
The Final Approach.
It's the FA. They got the full
Branta front wader
zipper. Okay, the Branta front zip waders. They're what I would suggest. Final Approach and Rogers do have some other decoys, waders. But those are the ones I used last year. They have the zip in liners, zip in, zip out. Rogers has like a mirrored similar one as well. Same thing with the front zip and the zip out and in insulation, 1600 gram boots. I found though that adding the insulation in the cold, if you get cold feet, having that insulation, which I didn't think for years would make a difference. I'm like, you got 1600 boot, but wearing the insulation as well, added with the boot, the 1600 gram boot together, can make your feet even that much more warmer. So, and it's such a big difference having that front zip. And I really didn't think it'd be that big of a deal. But I absolutely love it, for getting in and out of the waders, for, have your coat on and this and that. It's just so much quicker, so much simpler. You got to take a pee while you're out there hunting. You can just zip your waders down instead of like taking both shoulder straps off and trying to lower them down. And they're awesome.
Yeah. And, with the front zip with the Branta waders, and I just got mine, I actually haven't even gotten them wet yet, but the shoulder straps are super nice, 'cause they're not like that elastic. I always hate the elasticy shoulder straps, 'cause they just never seem to stay up. Where these shoulder straps, they don't have a buckle to get in the way or anything. You kind of put them on like a coat where you like put your arm through them rather than buckling them over top. And I really like that, like a lot. And that's a big advantage in my opinion. And I've had a lot of different waders. We'll see. I mean, you've had a couple seasons on yours now. I think you said you had them for a year or two. So they work so far.
Yeah. No, this is the first season for them for me. But I wore them all season. They're great. So I've had other ones of theirs, but this is the first season for that one, I believe. So Thomas says, where will you mount the punt gun on the houseboat? that's illegal, Thomas. Come on, man. It would be cool to have a punt gun just to put on the front, like not a working punt gun, unless it's for like pirates or something. But because essentially it is a cannon, right? But there's not going to be a punt gun, but that'd be a funny gag.
Man, now you're making me want to build like a stand-in punt gun to put on top of the pilot house, just like be up there out of the way. It'd be funny.
Right? It'd be perfect right on the very nose of the boat, but like that's also where the anchor goes.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying, like up on top of the cabin, and then out of the tip of the punt gun we can have the anchor light that we need up there.
Yeah, it works. Yeah.
It'd be funny, but I don't know. It would be cool to have.
All right. One. First question we got.
Now go ahead.
Yeah. first question we got, we're jumping over to Instagram questions now. If you want to follow me over on Instagram, Duck and Chronicles. If you want to follow Hunter, it's Hunter Rowenfelt. Anything but the actual name. And don't ask me how to spell it because, it's spelled like a sound and I don't know how it is. It's actually how it actually sounds. So good luck finding them. that's all I'm trying to say. Do you want to spell it for him, Hunter?
Yeah, it's Roenfeldt.
All right. Hunter Roenfelt over there on Instagram. I think it says in your bio, King of the Cans or something like that too.
Yep.
So first question we have over there on Instagram is, what states do you hope to hunt this year? And my answer is, I don't have a plan yet. I do have a little bit of plan. It's going to be Mississippi River heavy, and then I'll probably hit like the local ones here, Indiana and Michigan. But, hopefully it's like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, Louisiana. We probably won't make it that far down the river because I have other things I have to do in life besides just travel down the Mississippi and hunt. And we're starting up north. So I assume we won't make it further south than Iowa, but who knows? Maybe we won't be able to put down anchor and we'll just have to keep going. Never know. You got any other states on that I didn't mention on that list? Is that pretty much you're going to hit up the same ones as me?
Those are the same exact ones I'm going to hit.
You think you'll hit Michigan too?
I mean, I don't know. If I can get up to the UP at least once, it'd be kind of cool. We'll see if it happens though.
Yeah. Oh yeah, UP's awesome. All right, so someone's asking about Boss Shot Shells, Boss Legacy, or Boss War Chief. I have not shot War Chief, so I can't really speak on it. Legacy, I will say that Bismuth definitely hits harder than steel. So, yeah, there ain't nothing wrong with going with the Legacy. If you know, I don't even know if there's. I'm assuming there's a price difference. I don't know. I just haven't. I haven't shot them to know to give you a better answer than that. All right, here's a fun one, Hunter. Someone wants to know the river boat update and like something that I love to talk about. Like if you ask me a question about it, like right now, I'm just going to have lots to say. So the river boat update. So we just did a podcast on the whole progress of it. And we talked for like an hour. So if you want to see that, you can jump over to the last episode before this one. And listen to that. But, you know, long story short, there's just more things to get done than we can get done. And we spent a whole weekend. I mean, probably 80 man hours of work and didn't accomplish anything. I shouldn't say we didn't accomplish. We didn't complete anything. We accomplished a lot. Like we worked hard. I mean, busted it. And yeah, and there'll be a video coming out. It should be out on Duckin' Chronicles YouTube as well of that weekend. I'm assuming it'll be out by the, you know, a little bit before this podcast. So,
yeah.
You got anything else to add to that, Hunter?
No, other than like a wooden, like we expected with the wooden boat, as you peel back the layers, you just find more bad stuff that you have to fix. And it just is a never ending roll of bad stuff you still have to fix.
Right. Right. It's like, I don't know if we talked about it in the podcast yet, but there's literally people that call themselves the caretaker of X. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like their lifelong like passion. And you hear these stories about people who've had boats for like wood boats for 60 years. Or we talked to a guy at the marina who had his for 12 years. And it's just like, it's a constant, work. And he did it all by himself. You're like this thing needs fixed or this thing needs fixed because wood and water equal rot. So, and if you're not taking care of it, then that's how it's going to be. So we're going to fix as much as we can and take care of it as long as we have it. And then we'll go from there. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, a lot of work, a lot of decisions, a lot of everything that we're pretty new at. And but we're just having a blast with it. And I love just looking at the boat, like looking at the content of it, and it's gonna be so much fun when we get to season.
Yeah, and it's like it's a new set of challenges that neither of us have really ever taken on before. Really, I mean, like they're adjacent stuff, right? There's adjacent stuff to what we've done in the past, but it's just a new experience. Sure. And it's new set of problems that need to be solved, and it's I get a kick out of working through them. So some of them are less fun to solve than others, but we'll get there.
Right. If you haven't listened to the podcast or that last video, we did get the motor turnover last time. We did get the caulk out. We did start sanding, and then we started ripping out decking and replacing it. And yeah, it was a lot of work, and it was a lot of fun. So next thing we got here is, Grant, are you going to try to shoot a duck on every pool of the Mississippi with the houseboat? So
man, yeah, cool. that would be
an awesome goal. Right. I don't think it's obtainable next year. So with what we got planned and our decisions on stops and stuff like that, yeah, we can't do it, I don't think.
Yeah, I think it's
I think it would just take too much time.
Yeah, I think it's probably more likely that we end up finding a pool that's going to be promising for birds and we end up sticking to a pool for a day or two and then moving on, more so than like hunting each individual pool. I think that's kind of how the trip will work out. Just
right, because you can start in till season and be like, oh, I shot a till, get back to the boat.
Yep.
You know? And I think our goal is more than like that. And which I know that's probably not how you were thinking of it when you raised the question. So I don't want to, you know, put that in your words, but, yeah, yeah, it'll be, we'll, like I said, we'll end up going to certain pools, having some hunts there. And then when we're ready for another experience or to travel or whatever, in our set like dates that we're going to be hunting in the boat. And then there'll be some weekends where we probably won't like go very far from where we're at. Not a question. This is the next one. Instagram, I don't have their names ready, so I'm not going to, I can't say them, but, not a question, but I've got private land in southern Missouri close to the river. If you make it here. So right now we're probably not going to make it there, but I really appreciate, the invite there. That's super cool to see all the invites we're getting to different places, with the boat and all that. So, but if I do make it down there, I'll try to come back to this comment and give you a shout. We love, meeting guys from, you know, the content and all that. What do I have to do to get on a hunt on the riverboat? We've been asked that a lot. We've been asked if we're going to guide from it, this and that. As of now, there's nothing set in the plans, but I've been bouncing the idea around of potentially, and the biggest hurdle on this is like time and having enough time off work, to figure out when we could do it. So, there is potential for that. We'll see how it works out. And I guess I'll have to decide, you know, sometime this summer if we're going to be doing a Patreon hunt giveaway, or not. And if we can make it happen in the boat. So like I said, it's a time constraint. It's not like I've done the hunt giveaways in the past and they're awesome. But this year with all of this, and all the travel that we're going to there and all the travel, like working on the boat, all the travel in season hunting and the plans and the trips, I don't know where I can squeeze it in. I'm trying to figure that out. So we'll see. It'd be awesome if we can, because the Patreon hunt, we've done in the past, the giveaways have all been, really fun to do and really exciting to get somebody out here and do it. So yeah, you got something to add? You're kind of giggling over there.
Yeah. You totally skipped the fact, like the point of the question for like 3 minutes and talked around it, but nah, yeah, the scheduling on the boat is kind of is difficult, I guess is the best way to say it. To make the logistics of moving a boat down the river X distance, we won't get into too much of where, how far it's going to go, but to move a boat down the river with
hundreds of miles, yeah,
with multiple people in it, stopping to hunt during certain spots and stuff like that, making sure we're legal, like shooting times and the dates for all that, it's difficult. And makes it worse that we don't even know when the seasons start yet this year. So we really can't even say, oh, we might hunt this zone, because we just don't know when they're even going to be there. So it's difficult planning wise and logistically. Right. So hopefully, maybe, who knows?
Yep. Right.
It might not even get in the water this year.
Someone asked, any chance? It might not. It's going to. We're going to keep it optimistic, but right, it might not even float. The motor might not completely start. It might blow up. It might a lot of things. So we'll be very sad, especially me, and all the money I'd lose if if that would happen. But next question. Any chance of hunting the Great Lakes for divers with her? And I think it's safe to assume they're referring to the Timber Queen, the big 43-foot wooden river houseboat. How many adjectives can I add into the description title of the boat? It keeps growing. But the chances are zero this year. In the future, and I think that's some of the other questions, like, hey, what are the plans after? I would love for it to make it to the Great Lakes someday. It's kind of, Hunter, I think you kind of feel this way. You have some type of like emotional connection to like the Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite there yet, because it's not like, I don't know. It's something you grew up with, right? It's kind of like how, you know, Elliot has no, well, it's not that bad. I don't have like disdain for, the Mississippi the way he has disdain for like wood ducks, but but there's like, yeah, there's some emotional connection that we have to like wood ducks. You know, he has like more of an emotional connection to like blue wing teal, So, you know, there's some difference on that. And the point I'm trying to make is that that's how I feel about the UP and like going like on the Great Lakes and like the North is so cool. Honestly, there's not the same amount of duck hunting opportunity as on the Mississippi. So that's a one big plus to being over there. But I still think there is plenty of opportunity and it would be a really cool trip. If that could happen someday, I'd be ecstatic. But like I said, we don't even know if this year's trip's going to happen. We believe it will. We're optimistic. We're working on, like, we wouldn't be going up every weekend working our butts off if we didn't think we could make it happen. Yeah. Anything to add?
Yeah. I mean, other than it would be really sweet to get it on the Great Lakes and go like old squaw hunting using it as a mothership or something like that. That would be really cool. I mean, obviously I like hunting divers. So you're talking my language here,
right?
But there's, a lot of options. So once this season is done and if things, certain things go well, there's lots of options on what could happen with the boat. And I don't know, it would be cool to do that. There's some other stuff that would also be cool to do. We'll see. Who knows? If I win the lottery, we're quitting our jobs and doing what we want.
Anything that we can do with the boat is cooler. Anything you could do, if you can do with the boat, is cooler that way. This is the best way to say it. So, I mean, you could go hunt the Delta of Louisiana right on the coast. It'd be cooler with a 43-foot houseboat.
Yeah.
You know, now you can go hunt divers on the Great Lakes. It'd be cooler with a 43-foot houseboat. You could go, you know, whatever.
Salt marshes.
Inland marshes around the Great Lakes.
Salt marshes, you know, down in Texas.
There's endless, like, right? You could go to Alaska. No, we're not taking the boat to Alaska.
It's possible. Take you through the Panama Canal, hunt the East Coast up or the West Coast up, and go to Alaska.
Yeah, right. It's possible. Oh, man. What is the best FWA in Indiana? Honestly, like I almost did answers. I did put an answer on Instagram because I don't want a hot spot place. But this place is so well known and like so overcrowded already. It'd be like saying, like, have you ever heard of the Mississippi River? It's like, yeah, yep, we've heard of it. So it's, you know, the best one in Indiana is probably the Kank. Everybody knows it. And if you go there, like, I remember I went, it wasn't even like an opener, but it was like 41 spots. And like, there was like 100 and some people drawing. So, yeah. So you don't, you have like less than a 50% chance of drawing. It was a very, it must have been a very popular day. I think it was like right after they opened up the corn blinds or something like that. So it's if you can get like a top 10 draw, it can be good. But if not, yeah, it's public land, but it's lottery draw pick, which is not my favorite thing to do for sure. I'd rather go find somewhere on private land. Or private land, public land, or private land, opposed to not getting drawn. I will add that. So what waterfowl shotgun will you be hunting with? I will be hunting with the Weatherby Sorex this year. How about you, Hunter?
Whatever I can get my hands on. I don't know. I'd really like to do either a Sorex or a Orion, an over-under. We'll see what happens, though.
Nice. Yep, those Orions are pretty sweet. Yeah. You shot mine, what, a couple times this year?
Yeah, I shot it once during teal season and then for goose hunting. And like, I think that the third shell a lot of times is a Hail Mary shell, for lack of a better way to put it. It's more often than not poke and a hope for the third shell. So I don't really see a disadvantage of going to a side-by-side, where the advantage of having two different chokes, and unlike the Orion side-by-side, we have two different triggers. So you can actually choose which choke you want to shoot first, or like if you have a cripple bird. The other thing that I've started to notice is some of the ammo is getting less consistent. Not going to name brands or anything, but some of the ammo is getting less consistent. I had several boxes last year that had lots of duds in them and lots of like where the wad would come out but not leave the barrel. And obviously that's super unsafe if you're pulling the trigger right behind that and you don't notice it. Well, you don't have a chance of that happening in a side-by-side. So that was another thing that I was really liking last year when I switched to a side-by-side too.
Nice. All right. How's Chiefs training going? How's little Chiefs training going? It's going great, man. I had a little bit of setbacks early on. Now he's doing great. I'm really taking my time, making sure I pound it into his head, you know, by just repetition. instead of moving on like too quick. And that's how I started. I was just moving on too quick, thinking that he would just be able to get it. And then we'd regress because he didn't really understand. He would do it. But when you add in more complexity, then he would miss it. So taking it slower, because obviously I don't train dogs for a living. This is like my first dog that I started from a pup training like this. So very new at all of it. So we're taking it slow for both of our sakes, but he's doing great, man. He loves to do it. So, and that's awesome. When he loves to do it and has the drive, I think you're going to end with like a really good product. And you know, I got him from Southern Oak Kennels, Great Lakes. They have some great dogs. It's like having like the keys to a sports car. He's just all fire, and yeah, he's going to be great. And I can't wait this season, because he'll be a year and 5 months in September. So he's going to get on some hunts and retrieve some birds, and I just know he's going to be great at it. Now I lost the questions, so give me 1 second. And we're back. Is a wood boat really the best option for a big river
boat? No. The answer is no.
I think my answer in here, that's a loaded question. But I regret nothing. So that was my Instagram answer. But the truth is, like, you have to consider all things when we're going for it. Like, is it the lowest maintenance? No, it's like the coolest. I really do think it is the coolest. Do you think it's coolest,
Hunter? I don't know. There's some steel hold boats that are pretty cool.
Really?
Too. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm kind of a believer though that certain boats kind of like they have a personality, right? And the wood boats have a personality, where like a fiberglass boat, you know, they always kind of say that like fiberglass has no soul, but like a wood boat does. I don't know if people prescribe to that belief or not, but like if you're looking for something that makes the most sense, which means like you're going to have the least amount of maintenance, you're going to, you know, it's just going to be dead reliable, you're not going to have to worry about anything, getting a wood boat is probably the furthest from any of those three things. But if you want something that's going to be cool and unique and have like a certain visual effect, then the wood boat is what we wanted. So that's kind of where it came from. And it came from a lot of pushing from Jordan, who did not know what he was getting into, understandably.
I knew to some degree. I mean, because you told me, but it was just too cool to pass up when we saw it, right? Because we did look at some steel haul ones, but yeah, it was so hard to pass up on that, because it's like you said, it has like a feel and a look to it, and the whole goal is to like do it kind of like, I mean, if you look back at some history on the Mississippi River, like a lot of guys were doing it like that. So the whole feel and the look when we're hunting, we want it to look like an early 1900 duck hunter, you know, houseboat, cabin, trapper style. And so, and it's supposed to be short term, to be honest. Like, I do not imagine that I have this boat in like a decade, because it would just be constant maintenance. So if you're going for something like that long term, then you'd probably go with something more reliable, less maintenance, because those have maintenance too, but like not on this level. So if you're going for like a once in a lifetime experience, and you got a bunch of young dudes who want to work and grind out and like kick butt on this boat, and enjoy the process, because honestly, like, we're building something, you know, like, even though it's like we're not building a boat, but essentially we are partially with the amount of work we have to do, but there's something about being a man that like you enjoy the process of building something and accomplishing something and having like a like-minded goal that we're all striving to achieve. And there's something that about that is like a masculine thing that men like to do. And like, that's part of it. Right. And if we just got a steel haul boat, we literally would be like putting some paint on it and like building bunk beds out of 2x4s. And how much cooler of a story is this whole process of, we bought a $1 boat. It was falling apart. It was in shambles. It was full of squirrels. The wood was rotting away. It wouldn't float. The motor wouldn't run. And like all summer long, we came together and like we made this happen. Like if we weren't doing it, like this boat was probably going to the graveyard. It was getting pushed over into a pile and burnt. And we brought this thing back from the grave. We restored it. We floated it down the Mississippi, had a hunt of a lifetime, had trips of hunts of a lifetime. Am I giving you goosebumps
yet? Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm ready. You convinced me. I'm already there. Yeah. Does it make the most air quote sense? Like if you want to get a boat and not spend $1 million trying to keep it running. No, but with all the other stuff that we're talking about, it definitely does. Like there's not another way to do it. And there can't be emphasized enough the idea of it's a once in a lifetime trip for us. And it's probably realistically, we're probably not gonna be able to do it again. And if we will, it's not gonna be for a long time. So being able to do it in like an extra special boat, it just makes it seem so much more of a special experience. So,
right. It would not be as cool in like a Gibson, like fiberglass looking camper boat compared to this.
I agree. And like I said, like I do not recommend people going out and buying a wood boat. Like I definitely don't recommend finding one that hasn't floated
before you for do 10 though. Years. Yeah. Before you do, watch the videos and that'll probably help you make or break your decision.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, you're good.
When will the next video drop for it? Next question is when will the video, probably Monday. So I'm working on the edit for it. We got a lot done. We worked a lot. That's what I should say. Where did you shoot the goose band? Goose band question comes from the Instagram post because the Q&A post had a picture of a band. And I shot that goose band on the last Flyway Collective Collab hunt in Kansas. It was banded in Canada, Manitoba. And I had to beat up Elliot for it because he was unjustly. No, I'm just kidding. You know how hunting goes. And so then we watched the shot cam footage back after I WrestleMania threw him into the decoys. But we watched it back and the shot cam showed that I shot it. So luckily I was right and didn't, you know, throw him down the dirt for no reason. but yeah, that wraps it up. That's all the questions. We knocked it out, Hunter, in one episode.
Perfect. We didn't have to break it up this time.
Yeah. Anyway, there's no problem with that. I love answering these questions. These are some of my favorite podcasts to do because we get to jump around, talk about all kinds of different topics, and you guys following along, you know, you ask pretty relevant questions to like what we're working on or doing right now. Tons of boat questions this time, which was, like I said, I really enjoy talking about that. Really enjoy talking about duck hunting all the time too. So I appreciate you guys all putting out the questions. If you want to join in for these Q&A questions in the future, you can follow me on Instagram and I'll be posting in the stories for you to drop questions. And we'll be posting in the fellowship. We're doing these once a month or once every 2 months throughout the year. We got a schedule, but I can't remember what's on it.
I think it's like once a quarter.
It's on there. Once a quarter, something like that. So we got some more coming up, definitely before season. So anyways, thanks again for tuning in, guys. I'm Jordan, Duckin' Chronicles, Hunter, King of the Cans, Duckin' Podcast, and we'll see you guys on the next one.